into the militia or into the
Union. Well, like I said, you know, I was going there in McGregor, mm-hmm. told him August 1919. And I'm not sure how old I was when we went to Saskatchewan, but we lived there at Cinema, southern Saskatchewan, until summer of 1932, when the drought hit so bad. And then we went to northern Saskatchewan, my dad went to Homestead up there. And we stayed there until the spring of 1936, and we come back to Manitoba. And I just worked here and there, away from home most of the time. And then in June of 40, I joined the Princess Pats. And with them, we were at Shiloh, was a demonstration platoon, and it was at Portage. And, well, there was a bunch of us that transferred from Portage in 41 to the Grenadiers. We were all instructors. Portage, which was a bad mistake because we could have stayed in Canada for the whole of the war. So, not knowing when we had the best of things, we just jumped straight from the fire right into the old frying pan. And actually, in Hong Kong, there wasn't that, we didn't really do that much garrison duty there. We would spend quite a bit of time, would go maybe for 4 or 5 days up into the hills once and then come back. And that's where we were when they told us that the war was on. We had gone up the first of the week. And we were supposed to come back, I think it was on a Wednesday or Thursday. And they just told us that we weren't coming back down.
I heard them, some of the men say that, like, they took away the equipment that you were trained on and gave you equipment that you had no idea about after you got there. Did that happen?
There's a variation there, because the original Grenadiers, they were a machine gun unit, a Vickers unit.
Yeah.
And actually, the Vickers were no longer being used. And they had, well, I can say they had no knowledge, really, of the Bren gun and these other guns, because they had fellows that were sent back to take that, and I won't say what condition they were in most of the time, but going over on the boat, the ones of us that had been instructors, we were sent to all the different companies. And but then we had no equipment. You see, our equipment came on another boat, and it never got to us. Matter of fact, when we left Manila, we were told that we might have to get off the boat fighting, and there wasn't even rifles to go around. There was no equipment of any kind back then. And the older Grenadiers, they sort of looked down on the bunch of fellows that come there, because they were, I must say, that the biggest majority were fellows that hadn't been in the army too long. But the older ones that come from, like, the Pats and that, they've been in quite a while. They were, as far as I'm concerned, far better trained than what Grenadiers were, because the Grenadiers had just been doing garrison duty in the hot country, and they didn't that much. But we never did, and in Hong Kong there, I think they had a lot of, just before the war, all the boats that could make it, they pulled them out and sent them to Singapore. And all their heavy guns were pointing out to the sea. They couldn't turn them around. They were useless, absolutely useless. So, but we were just a sitting duck, that's what we were. And the refugees, there was millions of refugees in the city. There was a road that used to come down behind the camp, just wind down like this. And day and night, that road was just black with people coming in all the time. And after it was over, a lot of the so-called Chinese that were working in the camps, you found out that they were Japanese.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, yeah. And one of the worst chaps that we run into was a fellow that was born, raised, and educated in Vancouver. He was a demon.
Did you run into him personally?
Well, in the camps, but I never had any trouble with him. I mean, he was just miserable with everybody who got a chance. He loved nothing better to come around and talk about this and that, you know, where he'd been and all this. He was quite boastful about it.
Where were you when the fighting broke out?
I was up in the hills and on the island at the time. Yeah, up in the hills.
In you'd stay there, I guess, moving back.
Oh, yeah. Back and forth, yeah.
Were you wounded or anything?
No. 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 Close to a couple of them, but missed it.
Did you lose any friends during the fighting?
No, not any personal friends, no. No. Matter of fact, we only run into the Japs on a couple or three occasions. And we were up on the Sawaki opening in the hills this morning when they come along, they told us that the war was over and that everybody was to go to a certain place and meet there. And that was really the only time that we really ever had was real close to the Japs, a real close encounter.
Was after the war was over?
Yeah.
Could that be Bennettsville?
I can't even think of the name of it. Yeah. It would most likely be because all the boys were sent there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we were brought down to, something about the name of the camp was. But we were on the island, on a camp on the island, until well on into, I think it would be in and out about September, October. But the first 6 months, we had practically nothing. Anybody that had worked on a farm, boy, boom, they sent them out to work in the gardens and that sort of. And that's, of course, right away when they found out that everybody was a farmer. So then they started to enlarge the airport on the island. And they used to take us back and forth in the morning with tugs. And this, moving this hill was all done by hand. Baskets, or they had little narrow gauge railroad there with cars that would probably hold about a ton of dirt and around like that.
Did they treat you badly at the first of the war when you first capitulated? Were they?
No, not really. At the first, they didn't really know what to do with us. I don't think. You know, they didn't know what we would stay in camp. I mean, the time just was long. The fellows that could go out into the gardens, and work, it was all right. But they used to bring in a lot of ball equipment. The boys used to play ball a lot, and cribbage and bridge. Cribbage was a national game. But when they started to move the ball, we were a good 6 months before they made us do any work. And then it was in the spring of 43, January, I should say, they sent 750 of us to Japan. 250 they dropped off at Osaka in the mines in that area there. And 500 of us they sent into Yokohama to work in the shipyards. We worked on the boats all the time. We had different guys. Some were welders, some were riveters, reaming and putting plates and all that on. They were doing practically everything.
What were you doing there after?
Mostly reaming, putting the plates on the sides of the boats and putting on mounts, motors for the hoists and all that stuff like that.
Was it better in Japan or was it better in Shamshipo?
Well, Shamshipo, we had a rough time in there. We had diphtheria in there. We lost men just one after another, you know. And there was no medical supplies, nothing at all. So I would almost say that, in a sense, maybe Japan was better because they couldn't afford to let a disease, an epidemic or that hit us with all their people. So maybe in a lot of ways we might have been better off there.
You get better medical treatment, didn't you?
A little better. They give us some, but I mean, I don't think they actually had it themselves, you know. I've still got teeth in here that were filled. The dentists have said they're good, but they didn't use any anesthetic or anything. They just put them in. Yeah. But we had camps. We had two huts that was 500 fellas in it. And then the summer of 44, they built and they put the remaining, while there was remaining, what was left of the 500 fellows, all into one big hut. That's quite a place. But in weight, everybody really lost weight. I think the heaviest I ever weighed when I was there was 150 pounds. And this one fella here, He was down to 98 pounds this spring. It's hard to believe, but I mean, both of us weighed in around 194 to
196. Before you went there.
It's hard to believe that men can exist for so long on what they were getting.
Did the work sort of bring you down after a while, like bring your health down? Because you were getting such bad passion?
I don't really think so. Not out in the shipyards, because we were outside all the time working in the sun and that. I don't think so. But in the spring there of 45, they took 200 of us. But they considered the fellows that were in the best shape, and they sent us up into Sendai into the area to work in the coal mines. And I know right well that had we spent a winter there, I'm sure there wouldn't be 50 guys come out of that place. I know it for a fact. The fellows were really in bad shape. And
coal mines were pretty awful.
Yeah, we were working over a mile underground. And you went down there, you know, and there was not that much ventilation there, and it was hot. And when you went down, you stripped right off. All you wore was a G-string and a little belt with this battery and for your lamp on there, and the running shoes. And the running shoes, the old one with the big toe separate and hook up the back. There is one fellow here in Winnipeg. Well, I haven't seen him for quite a while. A fellow named Wagner. Him and I, we used to work on the drill. Less than half an hour after, we were just a cold black puff of sweat and coal dust. And we were lucky that there wasn't a lot more fellows killed in the mines than what there was. But that was a cold area up in there. And to spend a winter in there would have been bad.
Were you getting any information from the outside during the war? Did you have any idea of how long it was going to be?
No, we had no idea, really. I mean, when we were in the shipyards working, there was the old fellow we worked with. He was about in his 70s. And he was, when we first went there, he said, you know, the war, coming up, no good, you know. And in his own way, he did make it as easy for jobs as what he could, but I mean, he had his work to do, but he would give some of the easier jobs. But he would maybe say sometimes that something was bombed here or there, but you could almost tell at the last that the war was close to being over, because the American planes would come over and they'd bomb the places, and they weren't even sending fighters after them. And up in that area, lots of nights, you could hear the rumble of from the coast being shelled and that. And they couldn't even send planes or anything after them. I honestly believe, and I think everybody else will tell you the same, that they never had any intentions that any of us would ever get out of there. I think that their intentions were that either we would die working or else we would just be killed. That's all it was doing. And with these bombs that scared them so bad that they didn't dare try anything.
Did you get a chance to steal food when you were
up in the mountain, in the shipyard? Oh yeah, we used to often, after the boats were launched off the berth and on the water, they'd bring the other crews in the pipe for his neck from them. And the old fellow he had, you know, every now and then he would send us to get a bunch of buckets and we'd start picking up scrap. And then he'd look around and come on, boast us, and we'd go down into the prison, tie your lunch up along the place. So we just came about half of it, and we had from every children. Of course, he got his share too. But in the northern part, that picture right here, you can see this here, just the wooden fence around it.
Mm-hmm.
In behind these places here, there was a railroad going on, and the bathhouse was part of the fence. And we could get out there any time. Of course, they had guards on it, but we used to go for miles at night. And anything that was on a vine or eatable, we would steal it.
Did the guards know about it? Or
they knew about it, and the old commandant had said, you know, if others get caught, they'll get shot. But There's an old saying, it better be shot than starved to death.
Right.
Sure. And all this stuff, like the floor on the hustle was this high off the ground. And you could lift up the straw mats and the boards and the stuff that you put in. And you just eat it pretty well. You didn't waste a thing. Yeah. And then when the war was over, when they told us it was over, they told us that we were not to leave the camp, our own officer. We had a Dr. Reed with us from Toronto. And we were told that we were better not to leave the camp for weekends until people sort of got used to it. You know. But after the week was over, we would go to lunches, people, guys, and everything that was eatable. Come back to camp.
Did they drop supplies on your camp?
Yeah, they did later on. All of a sudden, one day, you see, as I said before, they had no idea that there was prisoners in here. Yeah. And these little planes off the, I guess, would be off of an aircraft carrier when they wanted to come over. And then just a few minutes later, the place was just buzzing with planes. And they dropped a little packet with the long ribbons on it into the yard. And inside was a booklet. They wanted to know the nationality of the people that were in the camp. First signs to put out like that. Nationality and the number of people, what condition they were in, if there was any that were real sick and all that. And they'd be back in a while, and they put out these signs on the roofs. And every day then they would come over and they would drop bread and fresh meat. And they told us that I think it was within about a week or so that there would be this plane would come in from Saipan. Well, I don't know what the name was for sure. And they said that the plane would circle the camp the first time, the second time he would circle it with the bomb bays open, and then on the third trip he would drop the stuff. And it was all packed in drums, 45-gallon drums, sometimes one, sometimes two welded together. On a parachute, and we were to watch him pick it up. And they dropped, well, just about everything you can imagine. In fruit juices, canned fruit, some canned meat, chocolate bars, cigarettes, all like that. And in clothing, they dropped underclothing, overalls, shirts, no pants though, just overalls, shoes, like that, you know, all stuff. And they would come over, I think it was about every third day. And we had three doctors in the camp. One was with the English troops, and one was with Japanese troops, in Java. And the odd part of it was, they dropped one day a medical kit off of one of these small fire bombers. They told us, and they said to watch for it, how would we mark and everything. We'd come down in two white parachutes. And to get it by way, so then it was about 4 hours over. But I don't think they've touched it now, but we had it. And the stuff that was in that kit, it was in that kit, nothing about that long by all the kit. Mm-hmm. Dr. Reed said there was enough stuff in there and equipment that you could perform an operation. So when the Americans dropped all this food, this English doctor, he wanted to just dish it out little by little in case the fellows got sick. And Reed said no, and the other doctor said no. He says, let them go to it. If they're going to be sick, let them be sick right now. But then, you see, we had had all, before that, a couple or 3 weeks, that we had cleaned up all the food in the area around about, you know. So, I mean, our stomachs, in a sense, were kind of used to it. And I doubt that there was a half dozen guys probably were sick.
But it didn't have any bad effects from it.
No.
Some of the men apparently broke out and boiled and that.
Well, they might from the rich food, like, but I have seen probably a big can of peaches and then just roll over and go to sleep. He'd had it. And it was the same in the shipyards. If ever you got a chance to have a extra rice or something, which didn't happen very often, but you could eat until your stomach was just like a drum and hurting, and yet there was that hungry feeling there all the time. All the time that hungry feeling was there.
Yeah. you get white rice most of the time, or did you get just the red stuff?
No, we get, well, the red stuff actually was more of a millet. We used to get some millet. The odd time we did get a little bit of a barley, and there was for a stretch there that we got beans, and that played heck with the volatiles. They just couldn't take it. They just rough them, and their stomachs wouldn't stand it.
Did you get soybeans in
it? In a sauce. I don't remember. In the in the greens, we used to get seaweed, kelp, and they had a vegetable they called a daikon, which was like a cross between a carrot, a radish, and a turnip almost. I used to get those an awful lot. Carrots, we used to get, and they used to come just wrapped in jute. Big logs just grew around like that. And occasionally you would get yams or sweet potatoes. And about once a week you would get a little bit of fish or a little bit of meat. And the fish you might even get, you'd be lucky if you got a half a dozen like that.
Did you get any Red Cross partner?
We did get, I wouldn't want to say, in a complete parcel, I would say probably we only got maybe one. If we got two whole ones that we got ourselves, that would be the limit. But the odd time we would get one, maybe one between whole, dozen guys or something like that. But for the amount that we got, it was practically nil. And there were so few and far between. And we did the last year in the shipyards get a little bit of mail. You might get a letter that was dated just after the start of the war, and another one that was maybe what, 4 or 5 months old or something like that. But there was nothing you could really quote on it. And then they were cut out, so much was cut or blacked out. You know.
So there wasn't really information by the time they got?
No, no. You might say there was enough left in it in the letter to let them know that everybody at home was all right and that was all.
Going back to the North Point camp, do you remember the escape when the four boys tried to?
Yeah, that happened. I remember the there wasn't too many fellows really knew what was taking place. I mean, there was a little bit of a rumor that something was up. But it was early in the morning that it was a rainy night, and they called us all out, stood us up there, lined us up, and we stood there right there until we on in the morning in this rain, just kept us there. Every now and then you'd see a guy pass out, and you didn't dare make a move to touch him. You just had to leave him way where you felt it. We never heard what happened. Matter of fact, I ran into the one fellow's sister here last summer. She asked me my name.
One of the boys.
Payne. He's trying to pay. Yeah.
There was something I've heard, sort of different reports of, or different versions of it. There was a groups of five or groups of seven or something that they instituted after that. Do you remember anything about that?
No, that could have been after we left there, maybe. But on the island, there was no place you could go. They had the camp was this one on North Point. This one camp was all wired, electrical wired. After that. But it was the same in Japan. I mean, we could get out any time we wanted, but where could you go? A white person showed up just like a sore thumb. You couldn't get off the place. And here in Hong Kong, if you did get away to the mainland, there was a possibility that you might have got to Macau. You might have got there, but that was all. But then where could you go from there? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think Portuguese in there are interested too much in having any trouble with the Japs. I doubt if they would have really gone out of the road too much to help a person.
So you
just my own opinion.
You just sort of put the idea of escape out of your mind and lived with.
Well, that's it. I mean, if there was somewhere where you could really an area close by within a reasonable distance you could get away to. I dare say that all kinds of fellows could have got away.
Mm-hmm.
But it was almost, in Japan, it was useless to try it. I mean, we'd go out at nights and that, but you come back the next day. You come back the same night.
Did you go out and get food, or did you go out and...
No, no, we still, when we went out up here in the northern area, when we went out, it was food that we were after. That was all that we were after.
Did you ever see any of the locals?
No, because we always traveled at night. It was in the dark that we were. We go out at dark, and we were back in before dark.
Were there farms around?
Yeah, in that area, yeah. It was all mountain country, and wherever there was any valleys or anything, it was all in rice paddies and on the sides of the hills, it was cut out in terraces for gardening and that. Yeah.
Chickens?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they were just as good as our chickens too. In fact, I think they ate a heck of a lot better then than they did now. Yeah. And the odd part of it was when the war was over up there, and then we were allowed to go out of the camp. Some of these fellows that were real mean in them. The bosses of mine, they just disappeared. It was just as well. Because if some of the boys that I found, they'd be in real trouble.
I've heard that from a lot of them.
Oh yeah, they just, those fellows just disappeared.
The guards left too, didn't they?
They kept guards. There was guards there right until we left. But they didn't, actually, I think they were there more to keep civilians from coming in or something. Like that, you know, because we used to take blankets and we used to sell them to civilians, and the guards would take them back and we'd sell them back to them the next day again. But there was guards there right until we left.
Yeah. When you were in Champshire before, some of the people that were there in Champshire before, there was a black market went on.
It was going on all the time. It was all the time. There was a few. The odd part was that all the time in these camps, they would send around booklets and that. They try to get you to learn the Japanese language. And a few of the fellows, there was a few of the fellows that could speak it real good. But most of the fellows had no interest in it at all, because it's a language back here you're never going to use. But the Japs were more interested in learning our language. And a lot of these guards, they were just a plain nuisance at night sometimes. They'd come along and they'd know that you'd talk with them. And they'd sit there and they'd wake you up to talk with them. Ask you this, ask you that, you know, and I was sitting in our language and all this. So really, they were more interested in learning our language to what we were in theirs.
Apparently they respected the Canadians more than they did the Americans.
I think that I have heard too that the Canadians, of all the nationalities they had, the Canadians were respected more than any. That still didn't keep us from getting thin. Yeah, it's...
How about the officers? And some of the men have figured that the officers didn't treat them as well as they might have under the circumstances. Did you
Put it this way. An officer, he has a job to do, and if he doesn't do it, he's really going to get it. But we had one in... Yokohama there, he was quite a tall fellow for a chap, and you would do what he would tell you, but I always figured that he was, for the job that he had to do, that he was fair as what he could be with us. He didn't see, he would try to help us. And I was quite sorry, actually, when I did heard after the war that a couple of our fellows went back there and testified against the fellow, and he was sent to prison because I happen to know that two of these fellows that went back there and testified against them, some of these guys hear what I say now will probably condemn me, but I would have rather had him than I would have rather had those two fellows any day, because they were the one fellow in particular, he was given a jail sentence over there for stealing stuff from us and selling it to the Japs.
Was that a Canadian officer?
No, it was one of our one of the men. Yeah. No, we had Let's see, we had, the only officer that we had with us was Captain Reed, a doctor. We did have a few others, some up there too. But actually, the officers were actually very few of them were sent to Japan.
Well, in Chancellor Poe, you were sort of under the Canadian regimental system, weren't you?
Yeah.
And they worked through your officers down
That's
to
right.
the main.
Yeah.
That's actually what I was driving at, the attitudes towards the Canadian officers.
I don't think their attitude actually was any more than the men. I mean, they knew what they were up against, and they had to take care of orders too. I mean, but they were under the same conditions, pretty well the same as what we were. I mean, they were separate from us. I think they eat a little better than we did, but other than that, they had to work too.
Who were the first people you saw when you finally did contact with the Allies, or the Americans, Canadians? Do you remember?
You mean after the war? Or
yeah.
Well, after the war, Americans. Americans, yeah. Because we came over right to Yokohama and we went on some of their boats the first night. And then the next day, they split up the two regiments, they split us apart. And then the next day, they split up the two regiments, they split us apart, and they put, we were on the U.S. Missouri, and the Iowa we were on, and the other calls were on the Missouri. And then they come along one evening, and they wanted to know if they wanted 30-some fellows to go by air the next day. And of the amount of fellows that they wanted, they only got about half of them. A lot of the fellows were afraid. They were actually scared to go to fight. They would say, suppose something happens. But there were a few of us, we just couldn't get over there fast enough. And the odd part of it was, we were the third plane. I was on the third plane to leave, and we were only out a little bit, and we had to come back with many of us. So when we did get to Guam, we were on Guam about a week, and for about 5 days, we were at an airport, in a hut at the airport. They didn't know where we were, and then when we did find out, they shoved us over in the compound with all the other war prisoners and pointed there to pour the medicine and stuff to us.
And they treated pretty good, I guess,
Oh, yeah, we just put the weight on you, something different. I come home, I had a big duffel bag like this, it was just packed with clothing that you couldn't have. I think I went to about 205 or 210. I'm 122 pounds. In a matter of about, that would be about 6 months.
Did you have any sort of ill effects after you got back?
No, I didn't. Because, I mean, I was, we were told that what we should do, to look after ourselves, and I did stick to it pretty well, and I was for ages before anything really showed up. But arthritis, they told us arthritis and asthma, those things would show up, and they have all right. But coming home though from with the American, we were really treated good. There was no getting away from it. We left, we were at Guam there for a week, and then we went Johnson Island, no, the Kwajalein Island, Johnson, and then to Honolulu. Honolulu, we were there for about 2 days, 2 days or a little better. But they had told us that if we wanted to stay, we could stay up to any time up to 3 weeks. And all we had to say, and they put us on the plane and send us home. But I was willing to stay for a week or so, but nobody else wanted to stay. Because after we were home a while, so then, from there, then we went to Oakland, California, and then to San Francisco to Letterman Hospital, and then to Vancouver, and then stayed home.
Were you married before the war?
No.
Did you know your wife?
Well, yes and no. I had met her with my cousin. Yeah.
So like, you just had your family, your parents, and that.
That's all. Yeah. That was an odd part too, you know. A lot of the fellows, would worry. We used to worry an awful lot about their family and that back home, you know. And I used to always say, you know, you just can't afford to worry. The condition that we were in, we couldn't afford to worry. And knowing that they were here, you know, here, that at least they're going to eat and everything, they're all right, but over there, you just, and a lot of those fellows to this day are still there. Just don't worry.
Had some people say that the older Army people made out better than the younger chaps. It doesn't seem to be evident with yourself. You were looking pretty good.
I wouldn't say that the older people. No, I wouldn't say the older Army fellas made out any better than anybody else. But I'll put it this way: that the fellas that were used to a harder life fared better than the fellas than a lot of the fellas that come from the cities. I wouldn't say the older Army people, no, I wouldn't say that, definitely not. But the fellows that were used to more of a harder life, working harder than that, I think that they fared, because we had fellows that, they shouldn't have been in the regiment in the first place. They were old men, and yet they come through it. Look at old Paddy, look at him today.
Yeah.
He's a tough old egg. And I know we had a fellow by the name of Stevenson that come from up at Mafeking. He was an old man, and I wouldn't have given two pennies for his chance to come out of there. He'd come out of there. And yet young fellows, real young fellows, they just weren't, well, how would you put it, maybe mature enough or something, or hadn't been used to a hard life. Or,
yeah.
No, I would definitely say the fellows that were used to a harder life of working, that they fared better. I wouldn't mind going back and living in the place again.
You haven't been back to Japan, have you?
I had a chance to go a few years ago, but I wouldn't. They went in the wintertime. Who wants to go in the wintertime? You can't sleep. And Hong Kong is a beautiful place. Yeah.
Just to sort of sum it up, do you think it changed your attitudes about patriotism and that after you came out, or did you feel that it was worthwhile that you went?
Well, I would probably be stupid enough if it happened again and was young enough that I would go again, without a doubt, but I don't think it... I'll tell you one thing, that they'd never get me as a prisoner of war again. That is for sure.
You'd be dead first?
That's for sure. You see, there was no place that we could go. We were sealed right off. Yeah.
Well, they talk about the Grenadiers being a badly trained outfit, and that... And a lot of people say that, and yet the Grenadiers held Hong Kong for 3 weeks with, what were there, 5,000 men all told between the Royal Rifles and Middlesex?
Well,
and the
but then there was some British troops there.
Yeah.
There was British troops there, and there was two battalions of, regiments of Indian troops.
But there wasn't nearly as many men as there was in Singapore.
Oh, no.
Singapore fell in 3 days.
Well, that's it, you see. I mean, look at the size of the island, and yet they couldn't get onto that island.
Yeah.
They come across there at nights with everything imaginable. I imagine if every man that was in that harbor had a bucket, he could drain it. They just slaughtered them. It was wicked. No, when you stop to think of the size of the place, it sure took the Japs a long time to get it. And that was one thing that the old Jap commander, he had a lot of respect for the troops on that account, that they held out so long against them.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't even the army that capitulated in the end.
It was the governor. He gave it up because, you see, they cut off all the water supplies, and there was even rumors that they had, a lot of the civilians had been killed. And that was why it was given up. But it couldn't have lasted very much longer. In a sense, maybe it was just as well that he did give it up, because there probably wouldn't have been half of the boys here today that are here now.
They take yeah. on the plane. Well, there was some feeling that they should have, wasn't there? Weren't there some of the men that, that just wanted to fight to the death? Wanted
well,
to fight right to the end?
There's probably the talk a lot right now. It's under different circumstances now. But it was, let's put it, when they come on the island, everybody knew that it was lost then, because, and there was, there had always been hopes that maybe they would get, the Americans or the British might get a boat in there and get a lot of the falls off.
Were they trying to get reinforcements in, or trying to get a hold of the plane?
They had captured and sealed off things. But the odd part was, we always wondered why, well, Connolly's big guns, that was one reason why they didn't come in from the other side. They come in from the other side where there was no protection at all. And I think that had they known the equipment that we had, they might have pushed that, just flooded that place a lot faster. It was really annoying.
The equipment apparently ended up in Manila.
I think they actually ended up in Australia. Yeah. There's a lot of different rooms where it went to.
Yeah. Sure never got to Hong Kong.
No, we never. Because we were told that we might have to get off the boat fighting him. And that was just going to be like a bare fist knock on the ground. Everybody looking for whatever you get his hands on.
Throwing rocks at each other. Well, that's all the questions we got to ask. If you got any stories you want to add, that's... Right
no,
ahead.
I don't think I have any story you want to add to it. I think the questions you ask will pretty well tell what there is to tell.
Well, thanks an awful lot.
The boys used to always joke about it. I think in a lot of ways they thought the Canadians were kind of a bunch of crazy ones in a way, because they always did fool amongst themselves an awful lot. Mm-hmm. No matter how bad it was, they always seemed to have a sense of humor.
Have any of the men dwelled on the torture and so on that went on?
Some of them mentioned it. I haven't talked to any that really were tortured, but I think the ones that were tortured didn't come home.
Yeah.
From what I've heard.
Their favorite habit, if you do something over, to line you up and slap you. Or beat you in a bamboo pole. But that slapping, oh, that. I think if somebody slapped me in the head and break it,
but apparently they treated their own troops just as bad as they treated
I have seen, I saw, I watched one day on the docks, it was Navy folks, and now what this fellow had done, I have no idea, but this officer just barked an order, and that guy just stood up there, you know, and there was two of them, they just went at that guy, and they just beat him something awful. And I'm telling you, if it had been our boys, no, none of our fellows would ever take that. They'd never take it. And our officers would know better than to try and do it.
The Kamloops kid is mentioned a lot.
Oh yeah.
He was pretty much despised, I think. Yeah.
He was probably the worst one that we did run into. But these have a habit that they get out in the yard with these old swords and they flash and whirl them around and then cut the whole bamboo poles, wasn't it?
The samurai?
Yeah. My hand to get all the wandering back.
Did you get any souvenirs like that? Any records or anything?
Nobody was really interested much in that. In something like that. The swords, yes. Everybody was interested in those. But I mean, as far as a rifle or that, no.
You just wanted to get home.
That's right. Just get over there. We used to laugh, you know, we had about a mile and a quarter to go to work in the shipyards. And every now and then, just like this here bath that's described in here, they used to have the houses on here. Men, women, and children used to all pile into them. And we'd be coming back at night, you know, and we'd see these doors wide open, you know, there's the guys we have in front of them. As soon as they saw the troops come up, boom, the little shepherd going by. Yeah. But we used to, like, we had, in the camps there, we had the stoves. But maybe, just on a special occasion, maybe Christmas, New Year, somebody would put a fire in. But otherwise, it was just a trap for when you were watching fire guards and they were running into them. But we used to often, for the hospital, we used to steal coal and we used to bring it in small bags on our back. And, you know, like, just small bags, hang down our backs. Well, there was a lot of comical incidents. Soap was something we never had much of. And when they would launch the boats, they put these skids underneath. They put a heavy coat of wax and then this liquid soap. And the days when they put the soap on, you could see all the guys, they'd run down and they'd lay their arm on top of the skid and then just run. And they got them and peel the soap off. That was really our clean bath. And salt is another thing. We got so little salt. This will really seem hard, but one time we were moving what they call a godown. There's a storage shed. We were moving rice, a bunch of us. And we moved salt. And you know how you can take sugar in your hand like this and lick it up? Could you do it with salt? Well, I have seen us do it. Just lick the salt up. The body was craving salt so bad. But okay. You try it now and you would throw up right away.
No spices whatsoever, did you?
Well, the little bit of money that we did get them, we could buy soy sauce and little things like that. You know, everybody had seaweed. It's awful stuff. Just like eating Russian thistle. Yeah.
Have you ever had any of that kind of food since?
The rice and that, I always like rice, but that seaweed or kelp or asparagus, I can't stand the sight of it. We see that, and they didn't even bother taking the sand out of it. Yeah. It's funny, you should be around sometimes when the boys have a meeting, and maybe afterward or before, some of them start talking about something they'll get around to, you should hear them. Some of the things they say. You probably, if there's a whole bunch of them here on the 11th, you might hear a few good ones then.
And you mentioned too the amount of rice that you had that actually wasn't fit to eat.
Well,
some of the boys refused to.
Well, yeah, but he probably got all that. The amount of rice that we got was very little, and sometimes, you know, these little weevils would be in it to our. So he said, meat is meat no matter where you get it. When you're hungry, you don't say, you got to be awfully pernickety to steer clear of it.
It's all protein.
That's right. Sure. Even if it crawls down to its own help.
Who did the cooking for you? Did your own boys do the cooking?
Yeah, some of our own fellows. Matter of fact, I run into one of the guys every now and then. I don't wish him no bad luck, but they were quite a bunch of boys, too. They used to keep themselves in smoking all the time, too. Of course, they worked in a place where they could get more food than we could, and they were entitled to it when they could get it in a place like that. But there was times when I didn't think that some of the things they did do, when they sold it to other fellows, which should have been belonged to all the guys, wasn't right either. But as they said, you know, there's hunger will make fellows do an awful lot of things that under no conditions would they at any other time ever do it. It's a fact. Hunger will drive you to things that you'd never think of doing.
Everybody was there just to survive.
That's right. It was a case of survival of the fittest. Yeah.
I'm also surprised that there's very little, I haven't talked to anybody that's got bad feelings towards the Japanese and the Hong Kong veterans. Maybe there is, and they just don't say there is. But
well, there was in cases of certain ones. You know.
Yeah, but individuals, not.
But I mean, the people here, they got a rough treatment too, in a sense, you know. And yet you couldn't blame our government here for taking them away from the coast, and there were so many. They had to get them away from there. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people. If it had been in another area, they were there fighting too. But But they wouldn't be, I mean, they, under no conditions would they ever send them there, that's for sure. If they were in the outfit, they just couldn't. No, it's only what I really hear. You ever watch the wrestling? They have one god awful habit that when they see somebody, they'll bow and smile. All the time I used to say, they just let me see where the heck they're going to stick a knife in. That was a fact. Yeah.